Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Baker, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, Charles Town, Little York, Texas. Today is August 8, 2016, or it is Hebrews 6, 2000. And 20, we're going to start our first service today with a song we're entitled, Yahshua is Calling. Yahshua is tenderly calling thee home. Calling today, why from the sunshine of love wilt thou roam farther and farther away? Calling today, Yahshua is calling this tent. And they calling today. Yahshua is calling the baby to rest. Calling today. Bring him thy burden and thou shalt be blessed. He will not turn thee away. Calling today, Yahshua is calling, tenderly calling today. Yahshua is waiting, oh come to him now, waiting today. Come with thy sins at his feet lowly bow. Come and no longer delay. Calling today. Yahshua is calling, is tenderly calling today. Yahshua is pleading, oh list to his voice. Hear him today. Thy who believe on his name shall rejoice. Quickly arise in the way. Calling today. Yahshua is calling his name. Today. Judgment Beginning 1970 by the Verdict W. Johnson. We're dealing with his tract, and rightfully so. We're going to our prayer thought is going to be taken from Psalm 60, but we're going to read something from the news concerning hundreds of African kings head to Israel for tabernacles. It says, because of thy temple at Jerusalem shall kings bring presents unto thee. Psalm 68:29. The kings of Tarshish and of the Isles shall bring presents. The kings of Sheba and Seba shall offer gifts. Psalm 72:10. In a move some believe has prophetic significance, hundreds of African kings, many of them with the Jewish roots, are heading to Israel this October to observe the Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot. So now what I'm going to say here, this message is addressed to Jeff White in Africa. And Jeff White, I have the Holy Spirit moved upon me to tell you this, that there's going to be about 350 kings from Africa that are going to be meeting in Jerusalem October the 12th for the Jews' Atonement. So our atonement is September the 10th of a month earlier. So you're going to have about 2 months from today, 2 months and a few days, just pray about it. We're going to pray about it here. We feel impressed, I feel impressed strongly that you should make your presence known at Jerusalem 2 months from now. So what we're going to do is we're going to pray every day, and I'm going to pray. I got some things that I can sell, excess things that I can sell that I don't need, to raise the money for you to go. And so we're going to have to have creation calendars, or you're going to have some way to show it to them on your computer. They'll no doubt have computers. So anyway, you can pray about it, and we're going to pray about it strong, and we're going to make plans to raise the money to send you to Africa October the 12th. Okay. Now, having said that, I'm going to go ahead and read you the rest of this article, of this news item. And I want to give you an opportunity to try to get in touch with some of these people before that time, especially this number one king that's organizing this group to go. He has about 350 kings from Africa, and part of them are Jews. I'm going to go ahead and read this to you so you'll know exactly what it's about. And then I want to hear back from you as quick as we can. And so when we go to raising this money here, we'll get that money to you as quick as we can. So you can do what you got to do to prepare to go to Africa. I mean, go to Jerusalem on October, be there on October 12th for their Feast of Tabernacles, their Atonement Day. All right. It says, in a move some believe has prophetic significance, this is the article, the news item now, I'm reading to you from the computer. Hundreds of African kings, many of them with Jewish roots, are heading to Israel. This October they observe the Feast of Tabernacles, or Sukkot. The effort is led by King Ayi of Toga, with an eye toward rediscovering the Jewish roots of many tribal people who believe they are part of the diaspora. In other words, those that have been dispersed all over the world. They will observe the feast at the Western Wall, believed to be the only retaining wall of the Second Temple Mount. The kings plan to sing out their love for Israel and strengthen their faith that the Messiah is coming soon. Now, Jeff White, you can contact this here King Ayi, and we're going to also try to contact him. But if you can contact him, we'll try to help you get all the information you can. You might be able to invite him to your Feast of Tabernacles right there and where you're at for September the 10th, and get a creation calendar in his hand. And so forth. You might be able to intercept that. But if not, then plan on making their Feast of Tabernacles a month later in October. Okay, so it says they will observe the feast at the Western Wall, believed to be the only remaining retaining wall of the Second Temple Mount. The kings plan to sing out their love for Israel and strengthen their faith that the Messiah is coming soon. King Ayi was crowned in 1994 as king of the Ayigbe people, the Agibi people of the Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo, and Benin. So now he was crowned king of the Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo, and Benin. The seat of this kingdom was in Toga, although most historians confirm it started in Accra, Ghana. He presently lives in exile in the U.S. in 2002, that the Second World Conference of the Council of Chiefs and Kings of Africa, King Ayi, was crowned by his peers as head of the Organization of Kings and Queens of Africa in the Republic of Benin. At the following conference in 2005, he announced his desire to bring all 350 African kings to Israel to recite the Shema, the Jewish Declaration of Faith, at the Kotel, or the Western Wall in Jerusalem. His announcement was received with overwhelming enthusiasm, reports breaking Israel news. Okay, Experience the Miracle of Israel, a documentary narrated by the late Leonard Nimoy, the six-part historical documentary, Israel, A Nation is Born, and the new WND Books release, where they call it God, Israel, and You. At least half of the kings who are coming have a tradition that they are Jewish. King Ayi said, some of the kings, though, are Muslim imams, I-M-A-M-N-S. Even they wanted to come. They are coming with the intention of recognizing that God created the entire world. For the ceremony has been organized in conjunction with the Israeli Religious Affairs Ministry. In the past, King Ayi has met with Rabbi Chaim Chanevsky and Rabbi Samuel Auerbach, two major figures in Orthodox Judaism. His efforts are also supported by the Beit Din, the Rabbinic Court of Bini, Brock, as well as the Nesant Sanhedrin. So the gathering is auspiciously timed since the holiday of Sukkot has a strong multinational element. The Talmud of Sukkot 55b teaches, Rabbi Eliezer said, why are 70 offerings brought on Sukkot for the merit of the 70 nations of the world? The teaching is based on a Bible prophecy, Zechariah 14:16, and it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King, the Yahshua of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Would you like to join founder Joseph Farah and the Harbinger author Jonathan Tong this fall on a tour of Israel? It's not too late. In addition to the religious mission, the visit will also be an opportunity to further the diplomatic connection between Israel and Africa. Educational seminars and tours will be interspersed with meetings with government officials. For King Ayi, this is the culmination of a long personal journey. He told Breaking Israel News, it was always known in his family that they were descendants from Jews. We always refrain from foods deemed forbidden in the Torah, the king explained. Circumcisions are performed on the eighth day, and we keep the laws of Middah, or Niddah, family purity. We celebrate Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and blow shofar, a ram's horn. Though this may seem surprising to many, Recent research has suggested that many African tribes have roots in the Holy Land, the Lemba in Zimbabwe and South Africa, and the Igbo in Nigeria are believed to have Jewish roots, though their status as Jews has not been recognized by the rabbinic authorities. The king has been criticized for his connection with Israel, but he stands strong in his conviction. I am doing this for me, since I am Jewish, but I am also doing this for my nation, Africa. He said, my people should stand for what is right. Standing with Israel is the right thing to do. It is written in the prophets, our hearts are completely with Israel. And on Sukkot, we will show that to be true. Life reporting, you see here, sign up for free news alerts from WND.com, America's independent news network. King Ayah explained that according to his people, oral tradition, their ancestors migrated to Africa via Egypt and Morocco. The Jews and the blacks are almost the same. We are really one family, he said. Though Israel's foreign policy is dominated by its relationships with Western superpowers, its spiritual ties to Africa are essential to Zionism. Theodore Herzl wrote in his book, The Art of Newland, once I have witnessed the redemption of the Jews, my people, I wish also to assist in the redemption of the Africans. This sentiment was taken up by the early leaders of the State of Israel, most notably Golda Meir, who developed relations with African nations. This effort was revived by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who recently concluded a tour of Africa. David Mark, founder of Israel's Africa Hub and Israel Rising, is working towards developing a stronger bond between Israel and Africa and believes that King Ayah should be supported in his mission. Only now we are awakening to the fact that many West African communities have authentic Jewish roots that were decimated by the European colonies, missionaries, and Arab Islamists. Mark told Breaking Israel's News, there is a lot of work that still must be done to ensure that these communities get the education and recognition they need. Yes, indeed. I believe that. I concur with that. And so, Jeff White, let's pray hard. We believe that we need to get involved with this, what's going on there with Ayah, this king that has set up as the number one to effect this revival and reformation for Africa. And so let us hear from you. We're going to now go into our main study. Okay, hello once again, Jeff White, Africa. I was just impressed by the Holy Spirit just now to impress you that you need to go see this king Ayah, there in on the Ivory Coast, there in Toga, and that you got a month before the Day of Atonement for your atonement, and so therefore I know you need to get your computer up running, and so you have special prayer today, and I've got some things to go in and sell that I don't need, that will raise the money you need to accomplish all this stuff. So it's time for it, and so you pray with me, and then you tell me, send me an email and tell me how much money you're going to need, and we're going to try to come up with whatever you need to go to see this King Ayah in Toga, and we'll just and to take care of what you need to get that computer up running and going and doing. So just give me a call, let me know, and if nothing else, we got several ways we can raise some money. So we're going to have to get it going. That's what you always said to do. The Heavenly Father said to do it and make a move on it now. So let us hear from you. Okay, we're ready to get into our main track here. We're on part two, page 3 of Judgment Beginning 1970 of the Living. It says, is this Assyrian captivity political or religious? So we got a lot of new understanding to accumulate here for understanding about what is really the Assyrian. So, I remember reading B.T. Hollis, and he said that that the Dark Ages, Yahweh raised up the Assyrian to bring the Catholic Church down. That was his secret army, that he brought the Catholic Church down from within. So, keep that in mind. Yahweh used me as his secret weapon to bring Gilead Center to a close. And that was from within. So now just keep that in mind as we read these things now. So, Brother Sons says on page 3 of this tract, religious, so he's asking the question, is this a Syrian captivity, political or religious? Well, and during the Dark Ages, it was both, religious and civil. It was church and state. It says, so Brother Johnson, he should have said, is this a Syrian captivity, civil or religious, instead of political or religious? Or he could have said, is this a Syrian captivity, political, civil, or religious? The civil government is one thing, and your religious theocracy is another thing, because it takes in both religion and civil laws. Okay? So now Brother Johnson is going on to say now, religious, he's answering the question. He says it's religious. This Assyrian captivity is religious, because those who are saved from this captivity are saved by the plan of the salvation. And then I'll add the rest of it through the blood of the Yahshua, Nahum 1:15. So anytime that you use those three words, plan of salvation, and you should put then the article in there, plan of the salvation. There's only one way of salvation. That's why you need that article "the" in there. So, from now on, whenever we use the plan of salvation, we're going to insert that word "the" in there, and a definite article, Nahum 1:15, during the judgment of the living. Okay. Now, the judgment of the living, Brother Johnson said, began with him in 1970. And you know what? I partially believe that. Because I know that Ben Roden wrote the Rodkill Close, and Brother Johnson was impressed to have the Passover a year later, 1971, at Old Mount Carmel, and invite the Roden to come up to be the wave chief often. That was no accident. That was providential. His former brother that he used to be associated with, naturally, he would want them to come on and accept the advanced truth. And because Brother Johnson was teaching that we were entering into the harvest, the judgment of the living starts the harvest also. So he wanted to harvest the first fruits from the rodents at New Mount Carmel, outside of Waco. So he invited them to come up, and they came up to Old Mount Carmel, and they were invited to. For 5 hours, they were invited to become the wave chief offering, and they refused it and turned it down. And then the rest is history. They they dissipated. The Holy Spirit was completely withdrawn from Ben Roden and the people out at New Mount Carmel. I know the Holy Spirit was working with them, because when Yahweh sent a messenger from California, brought a messenger all the way from California to go out to New Mount Carmel on the eve of the Passover and tell them, you better be there in the morning at the Old Mount Carmel. You better be at Willis Johnson's meeting where he's invited you. You better be there. And lo and behold, they came. So it shows right there that the Holy Spirit was still working with Ben Roden and his congregation and his members. So, because they showed up, they accepted the invitation, showed up by the Spirit. But then, when they was given an opportunity to be the wave chief of them. What a grand opportunity for the people that had just brought the rod period to a close. Ben Roden was responsible for bringing the rod period to a close at the end of their 40-year period. And lo and behold, he could have made a giant step, but he'd had to accept the younger brother, and that was Brother W. Johnson representing Isaac, or Ben Roden was representing Ishmael, and Ishmael in the type was 15 years older than Isaac, so it was a case of the elder having to serve the younger. Now this is proven true all down through the centuries. That when Yahweh started a new thing in the earth, he brought one to a close. He always set up the other by telling them that the elder has got to serve the younger. And it says there in Romans 9:12, he said, "It was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger." Who is he talking to here? Rebecca, the mother of Esau and Jacob. So it happened that Brother Johnson was also playing the role of antithetical Esau at that time. And Ben Roden was playing the role of antithetical Ishmael. And Brother Johnson had the role of antithetical Isaac's message. Isaac, and he had the role of Esau. Those two roles he had in 1970, and also he had the role of Joshua the son of Nun, coming, taking over from Moses, ending the rod period, which that was the last 30-year period, a 40-year period of Moses with the rod. So Roberta Johnson had three identities in 1970. Isaac, Joshua, the son of Nun, and Esau. He had those three identities. Now, so, I just read it to you, Romans 9, verse 12. I'll read verse 11 to you. "For the children being not yet born," that's Esau and Jacob, "now they haven't done any good or evil, that the purpose of Elohim according to the election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. For it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger." Okay. "For it was said of her, the elder shall serve the younger." Okay, so there you had it. Ben Roden, if he had accepted Brother Johnson's invitation to have acknowledged that and said, "Yeah, we want to be your wave sheaf offering," then it would have been a whole different story with him and his people. But when he rejected that, then Yahweh sent them a strong delusion for the next meeting, the 1 o'clock meeting. They wasn't given no more opportunity then to accept Brother Johnson's invitation. On that very day, they were given an opportunity at the third hour of the day to accept the invitation. At the ninth hour of the day, they were not given a second opportunity, because the enemy had come in now, because of Ben Roden rejecting Brother Johnson's invitation and stand up and making a declaration that this is true, Brother Johnson is my successor. If he'd have done that, then I believe that most of his whole congregation would have followed him. And then we would join all the Rodens together with the Johnson and continued on with Johnson as a leader. Okay. It didn't happen because the elders chose not to serve the younger. And lo and behold, that same scenario was repeated in 2002, 2003 at Kermit, Texas. Brother Johnson, being the elder, he was called upon to accept the message given to him by the younger one, antithetical Jacob, but Brother Johnson still got the title of antithetical Esau. And he refused to accept that message, and come in and come in under me on July 14, 2002. And so the rest is history. He was also cut off and brought to his end. Now this is a pivotal point for all the three steps of the genuine movement of the Seventh-day Adventists. This happened in three steps. This happened in 1888, 1890. Okay, it happened And that in 1888, you had the General Conference that was in charge of the Seventh-day Adventists by then. So they were the ones that Ellen G. White had acknowledged that as long as they listened to Yahweh and do what Yahweh told them to do, that he would recognize them as the leaders of the Adventist Church. And she told them that. But since they didn't, then they were recognized, but they were recognized as the elders. Jones and Reiner, the messengers, had brought the message of righteousness by faith to them in 1888 and said, now if you'll accept, such wise, if you'll accept this message, you'll be in the kingdom by 1890. So apparently there was a kingdom that was being offered to be set up in 1890. So the kingdom of Yahweh here on earth actually was set up in 1844 by Ellen G. White when she announced that the sanctuary was to be restored and put back into its rightful order. And she says she found her answer to that in the law of Moses in the Old Testament. So she was the one that announced the kingdom, but she says the sanctuary system had to be restored, put back in its rightful order, in order for this kingdom to function properly. So in 1888, Jones and Reiner had an additional message of what she brought the last 40 plus years, and they offered righteousness by faith, and further investigation would have led them to understand righteousness by faith in the blood of the Yahshua. That's where we're at today. And then how to apply that blood, they would have found out that it had to restore the sanctuary like Ellen G. White told them to in 1844. So then they would have gone ahead and then they would have been, that's if the General Conference had accepted Jones and Reiner's message, this is what they would have done. They would have investigated what Ellen G. White told them, and they would have set up the sanctuary system according to the Jewish calendar in 1890, because she says if you accept this message in 1888, you'll be in the kingdom by 1890. So that tells you right there that everybody was outside the kingdom. Talking about the General Conference and the Seventh-day Adventists that was following the General Conference lead. That's who she was addressing. All of those people that's following the Grizzly Horse leadership, she was telling them. She said the General Conference, in other words, I'll say it, she didn't say it, said they represent the Grizzly Horse leadership, the oldest one, the one, the lead team. And if you will accept the message of this Bay Horse team message, the younger, bigger, stronger team, then they'll lead you into the kingdom. And what would have happened to the Grizzly Horse team? They would have been cut off. But it wasn't impossible for them to be cut off. In other words, the elder was supposed to serve the younger. And they refused to do it. So they were judged by the sanctuary service that set up the Day of Atonement, Daniel 8:14 in 1844, the cleansing of the sanctuary. So when the 10th day of the 7th month, according to the Jewish timetable, came along in 1890, those Adventists that listened to those General Conference leaders and refused to accept the message of righteousness by faith of Jones and Reiner, they were cut off. They met their judgment. So you had the judgment of the living. So you've always had the judgment of the living taking place among the Adventists, from 1844 clear on up to 1970, as Freedom of Brother Sean says, we're in the judgment of the living. But also you had the books open that was judging the records of all of those carried back to the cross that was on record. So you had the judgment of the dead going on simultaneously while the judgment of the living was going on with the Seventh-day Adventists day by day. We haven't seen this before, folks, but this is the way it works. When Yahweh told me yesterday to go out there and get my box of tracts that Brother Johnson wrote and go through them, and I'm already doing his tracts, he says that I am to do these tracts and clarify them more fully, because there's hidden truth in there that has never been brought out. And and I was wondering, how come I don't have the clarification on all these things that happened over the years? And it's all because that I have neglected to use Brother Johnson's writing and to comb them with a fine-tooth comb. And that's what he's always doing. He's bringing all this out. I haven't even got through one sentence here of this study today from his tract, and it's leading into all of this information that I just give you. So we got some awesome information to unfold, folks, to you. And so get ready. This is going to be I don't know how long this series is going to be, but it's going to be quite a few. I'm saying quite a few. So anyway, let's go back to our reading. Now it says, when is this Assyrian period? Now Brother Johnson asking the question. When is this Assyrian period? Question mark. The period before and during the judgment of the living in the house of Yahweh. So now Brother Johnson is right here. When is this Assyrian period? The period before and during the judgment of the living in the house of Yahweh. So, once again, I'll remind you what Richard said, that Martin Luther represented this Assyrian that broke the back of the Catholic Church during the Dark Ages. And brought them to a close at the end of their 1260-year timetable they had allotted for them. So Martin Luther represented that he was working for that Assyrian power. That Yahweh raised up his secret army to defeat the Catholic Church from within, because Martin Luther was a monk in the Catholic Church. And I was a person secretly hidden in a Gilead Center from 1970 on. And that's what Brother Johnson said when he gave me a letter of dismissal. He said, Satan run this man in alongside me 32 years ago. So Satan, he run him in alongside of me. To vex this church and to keep it in disunity, to keep it in all in turmoil and tore up, in other words. No, that's, I represented the Assyrian yoke that had to be broken off the neck of Gilead Center. That Assyrian yoke was idolatry. So what is the Assyrian yoke? What is the thing that is put around everybody's neck, the whole world? It is idolatry. Number one. Okay. What brings this period unto a close? The Elohim people fully turned unto him by the Asher taking the reins in his own hand to the judgment. Who is this Assyrian? Okay, and what brings his downfall? So now the question is, who is this Assyrian? Now this Assyrian is one person. Now get this. The Assyrian yoke is one person. And he's not just any person. He could very well have the title of a king. Think about it. Alright, it says, in 1 TGR, page 24, and the number 24, page 17, brings to view some facts on this subject. Two people are brought to view in the church. Are brought to view, yeah. And the brother Sons puts hyphen, the church. Well, whenever you use a hyphen, that's a prepositional phrase. In other words, you just used a slanted mark to, because you didn't want to spell out the prepositional phrase, you just put a slanted mark there, and I automatically put the prepositional phrase in there. But I just put the preposition that was missing. See, Brother Johnson, he says, two people are brought to view, hyphen the church. He's saying two people represents the church. No. Two people are brought to view in the church. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I'm having to correct every grammatical mistake that's made. In a nation comparable to ancient Assyria, to which the church is under subjection. Notice the key words, a nation, and the church, a, one specific nation, one specific church. All we have to do now is to determine who a and the represent. Let us determine first who the church is. Proverbs 7:13-14. Now, before we go that far, I want to get 1 TGR number 24, and I'm going to turn to that page 17 and read it to you. Because see, Brother Johnson, by leaving out one key word, and that was that preposition, now he's saying that these two people represents the church. No, they don't. They represent a double leadership in the church. See, this is why I no doubt I'm going to have to rewrite all these tracts. I'm just going to make the grammatical corrections. I'm not going to add to or take from anything, but parlay out the complete thought that was in that should be in there. And that's all I'm going to do. If I have time for it. Meanwhile, I'll just put it on tape and do it by audio as I go along. Okay, so now it says, I'm going to... Okay, now, I'm reading from V.T. Hollis' timely greetings, V.T. Hollis' own handwriting, and he did have a hyphen between view and the. But Brother Johnson should have been the one that had the presence of mind to know what that hyphen represented, but he didn't know. So therefore, he just put the hyphen. And so that tells me, because I understand what the hyphen is there for, so therefore this was not for Brother Johnson to get it accurate, but it is for him to republish, but not to get it accurate. So I can understand now what's going on there. I'm going to read B.T. Hollis now. Two people are brought to view, hyphen, the church and a nation. And then B.T. Hollis forgot to put a comma at the end of nation, comparable to ancient Assyria, under which the church is under subjection. Okay, so this nation is Assyria, and the church is under subjection to it. But the key thing here is, he said two people are brought to view, and this is where the rub comes in. That B.T. Hall is trying to convey two thoughts all here in one sentence. And you can't do that. It should read like this. For there are two people brought to view in the Seventh-day Adventist Church and a nation comparable unto ancient Assyria, under which the church, that the church, it's under subjection. So there's one people that represents the Adventist Church, And there's another people that represents the Assyrian in her midst. Alright, now, the Assyrian has a yoke. How does she? No, the Assyrian is a messenger that was sent from outside the camp. That was sent from outside the camp into the camp of Israel. Okay. And so what was that Assyrian sent there for? Okay, the Assyrian was sent there to bring judgment upon the church. The people that represents the church itself. Because we got two people brought to view here, not two nations. Now, if he wanted to say it that way, he should have said, "For they are two nations brought to view." Okay, and then he could have said, "One nation comparable to the Assyrian, and the other comparable to the house of Israel." Okay. So then you could zero in on Esau and Jacob. You could zero in on Esau and Jacob. And then you would have said, well, Esau represents the Assyrian yoke that is sent into the house of Israel to bound it down with idolatry. Okay. And that's what Brother Johnson represented. He represented the Assyrian yoke in 2002. He represented the Assyrian yoke that was around Yahweh's people's neck. Get the point? Oh, folks, the plot thickens and this thing gets deeper all the time. Elohim's people, Judah, are asked to behold the messenger of the Yahweh. Okay, so that's the Assyrian. He is a messenger of the Yahweh. Okay. So now it says, and at the fulfillment of this prophecy, and at a time boiling with war, brings him good tidings of the kingdom of peace. So in this case, this Assyrian is a good messenger. The prophecy is fulfilled in the day of the unprecedented motorized vehicular traffic, the day when the chariots, automobiles, are with the flaming torches, and when they jostle one against another in the broadways, unquestionably in our day. In this day, he that dashes in pieces, wars with this antitypical Assyria, he begins her downfall. So now we're talking about this Assyrian nation. So Israel is going to bring down. So in this case, we're looking at the Assyrian nation, like we were in Nineveh when Jonah was told to go to Nineveh, which was in Assyria, and warned them to turn from their idolatry. And sure enough, they all repented and turned from their idolatry. Are you beginning to get the point? And then we know that Nineveh apostatized after that later on, and they were brought down to hell. Assyria fortifies her power mightily after her enemy comes before her face. Okay, let's continue. This is, I had taken about a 3-hour pause from the last time I talked to you, and you don't know that, but I was on 49 minutes and now I'm back. I had taken a several hour pause to reflect on this Assyrian, and who is this Assyrian, and what brings its downfall. Here on page 3 of Brother Johnson's track, and I've had some time to reflect and to think about it all. And so Yahweh says, explain that again. I have a little bit more, I believe, clear information on it. And I'm going to start with where I left off last time. Who is this Assyrian, and what brings his downfall? 1TGR, page number 24, page 17, brings to view some facts on this subject. Two people are brought to view, and Vitihara says the church, because you got a hyphen there, and I told you before that it's two people are brought to view in the church. And a nation comparable to ancient Assyria, to which the church is under subjection. Now this is talking about today. Notice the key words, a nation and the church. Number 1A is one specific nation, and B is one specific church. No, the A is a nation. It is not the nation that you can identify. It is a nation. And the nation, the church, identifies one specific church. The church is the Seventh-day Adventist church, and the Bible talks about a nation within a nation. So this nation is also in the Seventh-day Adventist church, masquerading as its true leader. And that's your general conference president. He's taken a usurped prophet's authority and has exalted himself above the prophet in the Adventist church, and that would be Ellen G. White. The general conference president has usurped the authority, and he represents the grizzled horse team of horses, and he represents the Ishmaelites in the church, or the Esauites in the church. Okay, and so he is also represented by the grizzled horses that is makes up the double team of horses pulling that fourth chariot that is a Seventh-day Adventist church. So you have two people are brought to view. In other words, you have the Muslim representative or the Arab representation in the form of the grizzled horse leadership, called of the flesh, set up by the flesh, and the bay horses that are called of the spirit and set up by the spirit. Now, double leadership in the church. Okay, so you have two people are brought to view, in the church, and a nation comparable to ancient Assyria, and that would be the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists, represented by these grizzled horses, one of the two of the double span horses that's pulling that number four chariot, which is the Adventist church, a double leadership in the church, in other words, one's born of the flesh and the other one's born of the spirit. The grizzled born of the flesh and the bay born of the spirit. The grizzled represents the Assyrian presence of the Assyrian in the Adventist church, of the Assyrian nation, to which the church is under subjection. See, the Adventist church is under subjection to this Assyrian rule, which is the General Conference leadership, with the General Conference president of Seventh-day Adventist. The church is under subjection. Notice the key words, a nation, and the church. And so Brother Johnson is trying to wax eloquent here, claiming that, acting like he really has a grammatical hold of the English language here. So he puts this in there himself. A, in quotations, means one specific nation. Well, that could very well be, but the, your definite article, designates one specific nation. The indefinite article A don't. Indefinite article A designates any particular nation, one of several. But when you say the nation, it's only talking about one specific nation only. So, anyway, that's okay. He says, all we have to do now is to determine who A represents and B represents. What does this A nation represent? Now, he's going to go on and try to explain it to you. Let us determine first who the church is. Proverbs 17:7-13 brings to view God's church today, brother said. That's Yahweh's church today. That he has chosen a new husbandman. That they are his covenant Abrahamic keeping people. Okay, so now when did this happen? 2002 is when this prophecy made its fulfillment. He chose Elijah David to take, as antypical Jacobite, to take the place of antypical Esau, representing the verdict that is Johnson. So this is how this prophecy is meeting its fulfillment. A new husbandman, David, antypical David, to take the rule from antypical King Saul, the first king of ancient Israel. So Brother Johnson then had to be the first king of modern day Israel after it was set up under the sanctuary system, restored and set up under the sanctuary system, then that would be the first organized kingdom of Israel in our day. Because it was Brother Sebby Johnson in 1970, so he would have to represent antitypical King Saul in that respect. And that King Saul was the first king of ancient Israel. Brother Johnson is the first king of modern-day Israel. Okay? Because he restored Yahweh's government and put it back into operation on the correct time. And so that constitutes setting up the antithetical spiritual kingdom of Israel in our day. So it says that he has chosen a new husbandman and that they are his covenant Abrahamic keeping people. Well, we know that Gilead Center did not represent that covenant Abrahamic keeping people. We know that when I was there for 33 years, I know we did not represent that purified covenant keeping Abrahamic people. We only represented what Brother Johnson represented. He represented those grizzled horses. Team that represented the Assyrian domination over the true Israelites, the Jacobites, in the church. And that time came in 1970 when antitypical Esau took his rule over the Jacobites. Those who render or restore him the fruits feast in their season. I've read a sentence. Well, I restored the feast in their season. Yeah, he did. But for what? Whose kingdom? For the Esau, the Ishmaelite kingdom, not for the Isaac branch, in which he called it the Isaac branch. But he didn't restore it to that. He restored it to Esau's kingdom, and that's the only kingdom he could restore it to. His appointed time, Leviticus 23. In other words, to restore the Levitical system, the divine plan of salvation, that these witnesses are numbered among spiritual Israel, SDA, to them will be fulfilled all the covenant promises made by Yahweh unto his ancient people. And this brings in the rest of this hour. You can contact us at the 11th hour call. I'm going to bring this study to a close. But immediately on our next study, we're going to get right into it at the very beginning of our tape with no fanfare. We're going to continue our train of thought and not break from it. And we're going to build to this. This is all brand new. We may do a little review and go back to who is this Assyrian and what brings his downfall again. But nevertheless, this is a must. This brings the close of our study. Contact us at the 11th hour call. Now, let me take on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Dusty Rivers of Santa Fe. I
Thank you.